We left off before Hanukkah, the first shiur, you know, the seder that we've been following over here has been to discuss the life of the tzaddik for a few weeks, and some famous ma'isim of the tzaddik, and then after we have a little bit of a sense of where the tzaddik was coming from, and I say that very obviously, with a proper sense of humility, that we don't understand where these people, we have no hasag of how great they were. But after we talk a little bit about their lives, then we continue to spend a few weeks studying some of their Torahs. But because the whole inyan of the Bnei Yisrael was Chanukah, that is Yom Tov was Chanukah, and I think one of my earliest introductions to Chassidus, really even before I was Bar Mitzvah, hearing things about the Bnei Yisrael and Chanukah, and learning some of the Bnei Yisrael's Torah. Therefore, I decided, by the suggestion of Rav Matisyo here, to interrupt the discussion of his life and to learn some Chanukah Torahs, which we had a chance, Baruch Hashem, to learn two very important Torahs. And now we're going to go back to talking about the Bnei Soska's life. That'll be this week and next week. And then we'll be able to do a bunch of Torahs in Mitzvah Shem on Tu B'Shvat, on Purim, and to really get a feel for some of the Rebbe's teachings. So we were talking about the extraordinary background of the Bnei Yisrael, the little that we know of his early years. I'm not going to review that. That's the first discussion that we had regarding the wondrous events that surrounded his birth and his upbringing, that he was born to a simple family, although his uncle, as I mentioned, was the Holy Rebbe of Melech from Lizensk. But his upbringing by his parents, who were basically simple Jews, God-fearing Jews, and the many efforts of the other side of the Sitra Achra, of the side of Tumah, of impurity, to prevent that great Neshama from coming into the world. And therefore, it wasn't only in the early years of the Bnei Yisrael's life, but we'll see throughout his life, that he encountered a great deal of opposition. My own personal belief is, why is it that the Bnei Yisrael seemed to face more opposition than the other tzaddikim of that time? Because you have to keep in mind, the period of the Bnei Yisrael is already the time when the hisnagdus, when the great effort of the misnagdim basically began to quiet down. By the time of the Bnei Yisrael, the misnagdim saw that to a large extent, it was a losing effort, and they were not going to be able to prevent the development of chassidus. Whereas in the generation before him, in the generation before the Bnei Soska, we're talking about at that time of the Balatanya, Rabaran Kalina, Kozhin Samagid, and so on, the time of his uncle, that earlier generation was a time when the Misnagdim believed that they would be able to destroy Hasidus. By the time of the Bnei Soska, it was already clear that wasn't going to happen. Nevertheless, the Bnei Yisrael experienced unbelievable opposition. But it wasn't from the Misnagdim that he experienced this opposition. He was widely respected by the Misnagdim because of his learning. The opposition was from the Maskilim. And we're going to talk a great deal about that. The Reformers. This was a time when Reform was making many inroads beyond the borders of Germany. In Austria and Germany, in that area, in that part of the world, the Reform had taken hold to a very large extent, with most of the great opposition already falling. We're dealing now at the time of the time right after the death of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, Rabbi Shamshon Fol Hirsch, these were people, as you know, almost single-handedly stood in the path of the Haskalah. With the death of these great tzaddikim, the Haskalah, the Reform movement, began to make inroads into Hungary, into Poland, lastly into Galicia, and the Bnei Soska was going to prove to be one of the major opponents, one of the great opponents to the Reform movement. You know, when I use the word reform, I don't mean reform movement of the Reform Jews of 1998. It was, in general, before the subdivisions. We're talking that primarily. We're talking in the 1820s, 1830s, that period of time, when the B'nai Soska was most active, the early part of the 19th century. So he continued to have difficulties throughout his life. We're going to talk a great deal about that. The last thing we were talking about was that he had gone to study. We were discussing the tzaddikim that he learned, whom he learned by, that he studied by the Holy Rebbe, Reb Mendel from Rimonov. And after being by the Rebbe, Reb Mendel from Rimonov, he went to the Chayzer from Lublin, he went to the Seer of Lublin. And it's in Lublin that he became known as one of the great disciples. And it's from Lublin that he established a great chassidus of his own. Although he would occasionally go back, to visit the Reb Mendel Rimonover, basically, the B'nai Soscher became one of the closest disciples to the Chayzer, the Seer of Lublin. We have a famous Maisa. The B'nai Soscher was terribly poor. As were most of the tzaddikim. And he therefore had to go by foot. He had to walk by foot to go to Lublin. He would make these pilgrimages to Lublin. And he would have to go by foot. He would once in a while get a ride. So I saw in the Svarim that there's a story that once there was a very wealthy man that was going in a wagon. He was going along the road and he saw a poor schlepper that was a B'nai Soscher. He didn't know who he was. And the man on the wagon called down, Reb Yid, you need a lift. Can I help you? Where are you going? He said, I'm going to Lublin. So the wealthy man invited him, thinking that he was some sort of a beggar or a poor person. When they arrived in Lublin, the B'nai Soscher, Reb Hirsch Melech, Reb Tzvi Elimelech, said to the wealthy man, that if I can help you, I appreciate you giving me this lift, and if I can help you with the Chayza, with the Seer of Lublin, in any way, it would be my pleasure, for the favor that you did me. Now the wealthy man was laughing, and he said, thanks a lot. You know, like some schnorr, like some beggar said, if you need help, you know, with the president, if you need help with the king. So, you know, he thought it was like a little bit of a silly little beggar, you know. So the rich man said, thank you very much, you know, if I need any help, knowing that he was a very wealthy person and he'd be able to pay off all the geboim and, you know, he'll be able to get into the Rebbe. So it happened that this wealthy person and his wife were childless. They didn't have children. For a long time, they were davening. They went to different people to daven. And they came, they traveled. He traveled, the husband traveled a long distance to go to Lublin, to the Seer of Lublin, to the Chayzer, for a bracha. So the rich man had to wait, despite the fact that he had made some nice payoffs, he had to wait a considerable amount of time, more than he was accustomed to waiting. There were some great rabbonim and people online to see the Chayzer from Lublin. And finally, when it came time, he saw, when the door was open to the Chayzer from Lublin, he was very frightened, and he saw that the B'nai Soscher was there, engaging in very animated conversation with the Chayzer. So he realized right away that maybe this isn't a stama schlepper. It looks like they're pretty tight, you know, it looks like they were close. Anyway, he came in, and the B'nai Soscher didn't say anything, he sat on the side. And the Chayzer told him he could remain. And the rich man came in, and he came in with a kvittel, with a note, where he wrote his name and his wife's name, that they were asking the Rebbe for a bracha, that they should have children. And the Chayzer took the kvittel. The Chayzer, the Seer of Lublin, was one of the best kvittel readers in history. The Chayzer took the kvittel, and he looked at it. And when he looked at it, he said, I see that you're going to have children. You're going to have children. But they're all going to die at an early age, at a young age. When he heard that, he passed out. And the B'nai Soscher went to help him out. And he was sitting there in shock. You know, he came for a bracha. So get a bracha, you can have kids, they're going to die. So the rich man didn't know what to do. And the Chayzer basically was telling him, you know, like, next. You know, it's time to go. So he didn't know what to do. And he looked to the Bnei, he saw that the Bnei Saskar has a shaykhis to the Chayzer. So the Bnei Saskar promised him a taiva. So he looked pleadingly, something, say something. So the Bnei Saskar said to the, asked the Chayzer, if perhaps the Rebbe could read the Kvittel again. Could the Rebbe read the Kvittel again? So the Chayzer had the most amazing eyes. So the Chayzer put his face right up to the Kvittel. And he said, he's going to have children, they're going to all die. So the Bnei Saskar asked, maybe one, if the Rebbe could look at it once more. So, he looked at it three times. Passed the first time, three times. And each time the Chayzer said, the Chayzer wasn't getting upset. He just looked at it again. And he said, the children are all going to die. So the Bnei Saskar now turned to the Rebbe and said, please, if it would be possible for the Rebbe to daven that they should have children, then the children should have Arichas Yomim. That the children should live a long life. And the Sefer, I saw it said the following. The Chayzer answered as follows. Hishmeilach hechiyasani. He said to the Bnei Saskar, you've given me life. You're mechayim me. Why? Ki pasachta li shvil chadosh, you opened up a new path. Shadarko, and through this path, uchalahavi Yeshua li Yehudi zeh, I can bring a Yeshua to this Jew with that new path that you've opened up. V'yulabonim sheh yirichu yomim, and he'll have children to live to a long age. And that Sefer said that the man had a number of children who all lived to an exceedingly old age. So what's the meaning of the Maisa? Right? First of all, you should give a right to somebody, right? You should give a, you never know, like if Shlomo, right? Always says, you never know. It turned out that the Schlepper was the Bnei Saskar, right? So that's the first thing you learn, to give a right. And what else do you learn from here? It's a hard story. Kaidim, you learn not to give up hope, that's for sure. When you hear a Maisa, you have to try to look to see in the Sefer of the Tzaddik, if there's any place from the Sefer of the Tzaddik that we could use to help understand the Maisa. So I found in the Bnei Saskar, in his Mamorim for Shabbos, in the first Maimah, the 16th Torah. I would have photostated it for you, but I didn't have a place to go to. I remembered it, and I didn't have a place to photostat it tonight. So listen carefully. Just a few sentences. Listen to this Torah. He's explaining the pasuk that we say from Dovra Melech, Vanis vilosi l'cha Hashem eis rotzen. Vanis vilosi l'cha Hashem eis rotzen. Hashem, I'm offering you this tefillah. Should be an eis rotzen, should be a good time, a time because Baruch was open to my tefillahs. Elokim rav chasdecha, Hashem, with your great kindness, aneni be'emes yishecha. Respond to me, answer me be'emes yishecha. With an emes tiki Yeshua. So on this pasuk, the Bnei Saskar writes the following. Al pi ma shamati b'shem kvoid adoni moi v'rabi harav HaKadosh m'Rav Yaakov Yitzchak zatzal. That's the Chayzer from Lublin. Rav Yaakov Yitzchak. He says, I heard from my Rebbe, the Chayzer from Lublin. The lefamim nen ha'odom afilu shlo ayidei tefila rak ayidei dirbu ba'alma. Sometimes a person can be answered even if he hasn't davened. Even if he hasn't davened just by saying something. Just by saying, Mitzvah Shem have children. Mitzvah Shem have a panosa. Halavai, the children should be okay. Even without opening up the tehillim. Even without davening, without pouring one's heart out. The Chayzer taught that it's possible that a person could be answered with dibur ba'alma. Just by saying something. Sho'ayme yehekach v'kach. When a Jew says, it should be like this. Halavai, it should be this way. That just by saying that, ubeim hu eis rotzen, The Chayzer said that if it's an Eis Ratzon, if Kivyochel Hashem, at that moment, it's an opportunity, it's a real Eis Ratzon, it's a very great Eis Ratzon, meaning that it's a time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extremely, extremely open to our needs and our requests. Miskayim Devaru, the Chayzer taught. Hashem will grant it. However, he says, however, Avachiluk Hu, Bein Dover HaMispoil Al Yidei Tfilo, Ubein Dover HaMispoil Al Yidei Dibur. Nevertheless, even though both can have the desired effect, if it's an Eis Ratzon, if it's a good time to daven, if it's a strong Eit Ratzon, so even if you don't daven, the Chayzer says, but you just say a good word, you say Halavai should be good, you should have a full Shleimer, you're not even davening. That could have the same desired effect. It could have the desired effect as tefillah. Still, the Chayzer taught there's a difference between results of Dibur Ba'alma, of Stam speaking, and tefillah. There's a chiluk. What's that? Shahadova ha-mispoil, rak al-yedei Dibur, ein adam batuach shiye l'hadova ha-nifal koach hakiyum. When you say something, when you say something good to another Jew, imagine you say, have a nice day. Have a nice day. Say, good morning. Tzafratava. Have a good morning. That at a time of an Eis Ratzon, the Baruch Shalom will say, okay, good. Send it out. It's good. But the chiluk, he says, is between that, between words and tefillah, is that the good words that one Jew says to another, or about himself, or for his children, and so on, don't necessarily have a kiyum. It's a temporary gift, which afterwards you have to pour your kaifas into. You have to work, like everything in the world. Things that are true, things that are real, require effort, require work. So even though temporarily you'll be answered, because you said a nice word, and it was a good time to say it, so that those words will be, Hashem will respond. Nevertheless, the Chayzer taught that it doesn't necessarily have a kiyum.
What happens when somebody's asked you, how are you doing with Baruch
Hashem? Baruch Hashem is praising Hashem. It's not requesting something. You say, Baruch Hashem, I could do better. Or Baruch Hashem, I could use a little parnasa. But Baruch Hashem, maybe that also, because Baruch means, according to Chazal, according to the way it's explained by the Shoinim, Baruch is a lashon of Hamshachin. In other words, Baruch means to draw good things. The word Baruch is the word Brecha, which means a pool. And the word Baruch, when the Jew says Baruch Hashem, he's trying to draw something of Hashem's presence and Baruch into his life. So maybe even just to say Baruch Hashem. Right, Yerecha Hashem. So when you give another Jew a Baruch, when you say to somebody else, Yerecha Hashem, Anachanami, he's saying, Hashem bench you. Yeah. 100%. That's already a little bit of a tefillah. But the difference here is that it might not last. Siskegon bispal odom al eza akar v'akar v'shif kedem Hashem is barachine imnena b'tefillosov and nesabra akar v'azai hazer hu shal kayama. So the B'nai Sosso brings from the Chayzer that he says, for instance, if a person really, really davens for someone who can't have a child, who wasn't having a child, who wasn't able to have, to conceive, and somebody really davens, so he says, and Hashem answers, so then that child will have a kayama. That child, meaning, will be a zara chayve kayama. The child will live. The child will live and will go on. Masha eni ken kishenifal hadover rakai de dibur. That's not the case when a person's good wishes or a person said something stam and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers that. That's not necessarily the case. Ein hadover batuach kol kach. L'koach hakiyum. It's not so certain anymore. It could be, but it's not certain anymore that this is going to be long lasting. V'herich harav HaKadosh Zatzal b'dover. So the Bnei Sosra, that's the teaching for Chayzer. The Bnei Sosra ends by saying, what did you turn it down to? Oh. Umeati says, Nivor Aideze Apostik, Shoy Meriz Knesis, Philip Nekarish Baruch, who now we understand the Apostik. Vanis Filosti Lucha Hashem Eis Ratzon. What does that mean? What's the loyma? Hagam shu eisrotzayin. V'yochel hodam lifal b'dibur mibli tfila. Even though it's an eisrotzayin. Meaning, it's a time where everything is open above, and really, I don't even have to daven. I can be answered just when I say good things, it will work also. Im kolzos ani eini soymech al zeh. I don't want to, Hashem, I'm not relying upon the words that I might have said. Please don't use that to count completely. Rak ani tfilosi lecha Hashem. I want to daven to you, Hashem, about this inyan. Not just say, talk about it or suggest. I want to daven. Ani tfilosi lecha Hashem eisrotz. Ani mispalu lefanecha betfilo mamish. Therefore, Elokim barov chazdecha, Hashem, because of your great chesed, aneini be'emes yeshecha. What does it mean, be'emes yeshecha? It should be an emesdiki Yeshua. What's up, Shat? Isn't every Yeshua emesdik? No. Why? What's emes? What does emes mean? Emes means mitchila v'atzoi. Emes means from aleph till sof. The whole thing.
The whole thing, in the middle of the mem.
Right, right. The aleph is the beginning, the mem is the middle of aleph base, and the sof is the end. Aneini be'emes yeshecha means an emesdiki Yeshua mitchilos of atzoifai. Without interruptions. Without it being chalila stopped. That's vanis tfilosi to the koch of tfilo. Vanis tfilosi l'cho Hashem eisrotzen. Aneini be'emes elkim b'roib chazdecha. Aneini be'emes yeshecha. He says, Tovo alai yishuascha be'emes. Emes means emes kayemes, la'ad. Emes means b'koy hakiyum, Yeshua nitzchis, kushta koy. Truth is forever. Mizel be'emes yishach. Hey, Nirul. Okay, so that's a Torah that the B'nai Sosa brings from the Chayzer. So let's go back to the story. Let's try to understand Pshat in the story. On our level to understand. So that rich Jew went into the Chayzer for a bracha. And the Chayzer looks at the Kvitl and he says, You're gonna have children, but they're going to die young. Meaning they're not gonna have a kiyum. They're not gonna have a kiyum. You'll have children. The chazi didn't daven. He said, you're gonna have children. And he read the kvittel. So B'nai Sosa said three times. Until finally, the B'nai Sosa asked the Rebbe, could you daven for thee? Could you daven? That was, there were going to be children, which he couldn't have until now. But the children were not going to have an Arichas Yomim until when? Until the Chayza would pour a tefillin. And when the B'nai Sosa said that, so the Chayza was so happy, and he said, your mamish gave me life, and I was able to help a yid. So what's the question, the obvious question? Why? Like the Chayza was the B'nai Sosa's rabbi. You know? So what happened? Like, why is that? It must be that. It must. He didn't even have to tell him, but I guess the Chayzer started to read that in the B'nai Sosa because the B'nai Sosa was so desperate. It must be, I don't know. It seems, to Avi and I, maybe somebody else here, it seems that what? That for sure the Chayzer knows the daven. You don't think the Chayzer used to cry for Eden? The Chayzer must have seen that this Jew, look, the B'nai Sosa didn't know him. The guy apparently was not worthy of having children that would live a long life. He apparently was not worthy. He wasn't Zoycha. So the B'nai Sosa wasn't giving up. And finally, when the Tzadik, the B'nai Sosa said to Davin, so the Chayza must have connected to the Toiva, to the Schus, that the B'nai Sosa felt a Shaykhus, a Kesher to that wealthy man, Akedekach, that he said, you open up for me a place that I could Davin for this Jew. Which at that point, it must be that the Chayza must have understood that the B'nai Sosa benefited in some great way. I don't know if the Chayza had great eyes. So whatever it was that was preventing it from coming through, but at this point, the Chayza said, okay, I'm going to daven. And the man had children that lived there, Yichas Yom. That's the Kli Kibul.
So once there's a Bakasha, so then there can be a Tzvila. But if there's a Tzadik Davins and the person doesn't ask for it, so then maybe it's...
Well, the person came crying for it. He came crying for children. Help me, I should have children. He himself wasn't, I think it's the same shot. In other words, he wasn't the worthy Clay Kibble. You're right. You have to be able to receive a bracha. You have to be a Kaylee to receive it, and he wasn't yet, this man wasn't a Kaylee. So two things were happening, probably. One thing is that the man was probably a very haughty person, judging by the beginning of the story that he was laughing at a poor man like, who are you? That's at least in the Sefer, the way the story is brought down. So he was probably a haughty person. It was a big veer. It was a big kanaka. He came, he's going to get a bracha and finish. He's going to have kids. So kaidim, it could be that part of making him into a worthy vessel was to give him a little bit of a clap, right? Because otherwise the Rebbe didn't have to say anything. The Rebbe could just said, I can't help you, right? Why did the Rebbe have to say, you're going to have kids, they're going to die? That's an odd thing. The Lelov Rebbitzin. The Kotzke. That's a Maisa from Kotzke. You know that Maisa? You remember that? That's a gewaltige story. Yes, the story there it was clear. This is already, we have to try to understand. That was a Maisa. I'm not going to say the whole story again because some of the Chevron knows it. But the story about Kitzer was the Reb David Lelov's daughter couldn't have a baby. She was married for some time. She was mamish like a brilliant, beautiful girl. She couldn't have. She went with her mother to the Kotzker. The Kotzker's not famous for his warm welcomes, as you know. And they came into the Rebbitzin, they came with fur coats and with jewelry. It was Rebbitzin stock. And they walked in like this. And they were told, she said, I'm David Lelov's Rebbitzin. So the Shama said, wait online. That's how it worked in Kotzk. Get online. So they were very indignant. Right away. Very upset. Well, finally, after waiting, they came in. The Kotzker was busy, was learning or something. And then he looked up and he says, who are you? So, the Rebbitzin says, I'm the Lelov Rebbitzin, expecting him to go, ooh. He just was looking in the Gemara. And this is my daughter. So the Kotzker says, what do you want? So the mother motions to the girl to say. So she says that they're married already for such and such amount of years, we don't have any children. So my father, the Rebbe said I should come here for a bracha. So the Kotzke looks up for a second, he lets it have it. He screams at her, you nothing, you worthless empty. He starts like mamish cursing her. She starts to cry, she runs out, the Rebbitzin stands her ground, she stands her ground, Kotzke or no Kotzke. And the Kotzke puts his head back in the door. And the Rebbitzin says, what kind of a thing is this? I never heard of such a thing. My husband sees thousands of people. He gives everybody chizik and brachas. And what kind of thing is it? Came from bracha. What did my daughter ever do? She's a wonderful girl. She's a tzedekis. And this and that. And the Kotzke is learning. She goes out because she hears her daughter's wailing, crying. She goes out there. Then a couple of minutes later, the Kotzke sends for them. And they come in there, and the Kotzke says, you'll have a child this year. So they can't figure out what's going on. Brachas, curses, curses, brachas. So the Kotzke said, I want to tell you something. He says to the Rebbe, you came in here with your daughter. Your daughter was so filled with herself. Double all of his daughter. Nobody ever said a word to her to improve herself. Nobody ever said a word to, like this, royalty. How could I give her a bracha? There wasn't any room. There wasn't anything carved out inside of her to receive a bracha. So you'll forgive me. I had to break you in so many pieces. You were broken a little bit for the first time in your life. Now you're clear to receive. And that's, you do it. That the tzaddikim, they say from the Kotzke that there's nothing, they say from a few tzaddikim, but the Tzitzchel, they say from the Kotzke that the Kotzke said that there's nothing as whole as a broken vessel. There's nothing as whole as that which is broken. And that's the pshat. So it seems that in this story, that in order that there should be a kiyum for the child, there had to be a real tefillah. There had to be a real tefillah. We have to know that for ourselves too. I just wanted to give you an example of how when you see a story from a tzaddik, so the story is not just a ma'aseh, it's part of his Torah. The story, the Torah, it's all the same. So we have a ma'aseh from Bnei Sosa with the Chayz, and here's a Torah that Bnei Sosa brings from the Chayz. Let's continue to discuss what happened afterwards. After some time, the Bnei Sosa was generally viewed as being the Reisha Chavraya. There were a few dozen tzaddikim, students of the Chayza from Lublin, who were known as those who wore white bekishes, white strimals. There was a chavraya, there was a group there of tzaddikim, who the Chayza gave permission to dress in such a way, and that they were, and that they were known, each one of those tzaddikim, each one of those tzaddikim who were wearing the white clothing, was known by the Chayzer to be a Baal Ruach HaKaydesh, to be a person that had this koach of Ruach HaKaydesh, and by most of the Talmidim, the Bnei Sosra was considered to be the Rosh HaChavrai, to be the head of those tzaddikim who were the Talmidim of the Chayzer, and each one of those Talmidim who wore white was known to be a big Baal Ruach HaKaydesh. We'll talk about some of the names of Mitzvah Shem later on. And I told you the Chayzer referred to him as my Chanukah lamp, my Chanukah light. He referred to him also as Har Sinai. He used to call the Bnei Sosra Har Sinai. Har Sinai. And we have some of the most reliable accounts of what it was like in the court of the Chayzer. Since the Bnei Sosra was such a prolific writer, there's maybe only a handful of Chassidish tzaddikim who wrote as much as the Bnei Sosra. In terms of the mere volume, the amount that he wrote, and he's in terms of the top of the list of maybe the Tzemach Tzedek, Nosson Breslover, in modern times, the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Levrach of Tzadikim who had such extensive writing, Tosca regarding the Ruach HaKodesh, regarding the powers of the Chayzer, are absolutely astounding. Now you have to remember, the Bnei Tosca was a perfect Tzadik. He was an Ish Emes. He was an Ish Emes, and we see it in his entire life. The way that he describes the Ruach HaKodesh of the Seer of Lublin, the Chayzer from Lublin, in his Svarim, is something which he saw with his own eyes. We're not reading this by some guy that wrote a biography of the Chayzer. The Bnei Soska saw with his own eyes. One of the things, we'll talk about many things along the way, but one of the most famous things that the Bnei Soska writes about in the Sefer, is that he said that during the first 12 days of Nisan, it's a Chassidish custom to lane from a Sefer Torah each day the Nisim. The Nisim that we just read, the princes of the tribes. And the Bnei Sosra writes that the Chayzer during those 12 days, each day, would tell what was going to happen, major events that were going to happen during the 12 months of the year. During the 12 months of the year. In other words, each day, so the first day was Nisan, and Iyar, and Sivan, and so on. And he would go through the entire year in such a way, basically saying what would happen, there'd be this milchama, there'd be this thing, this town would, there'd be a fire, here they'd lose money, and so, you know, and here would be the good things, and he would say, what would happen for that month during the first 12 days of Nisan? And the Bnei Sosra said he saw this for many years, not once. And he also knows the Bnei Sosra himself saw that when writing in the last year of his life, it would turn out to be the last year of his life, that because the Chayzer used to write this down also. He used to write down in a diary, in some book, he would write down what was going to be during that year, major things. And in the year that he died, that Reish Chodesh Nisan, it ended by the month of Av. Since the Chayzer died Tisha B'Av. The Chayzer's Yahrzeit is Tisha B'Av. That's when the Chayzer had his Nefila from the windows, all Maisit, that Simchas Torah, it was all, you know, another story of the Nefila. When we talk about the Seer of Lublin, we'll go into that in great detail. But there was the Chayzer from Lublin, with the Kozhen Samagin, with Mendel Rimanov, were making a great effort to bring Mashiach. And they were all three were nifted the same year. There was this whole conspiracy to bring Mashiach. A good conspiracy. And apparently it didn't work out. So it was obviously with great personal risk. And that's when, by the Chassidim, they talk about the Nefila. The Nefila means on that Simchas Torah when the Chayzer from Lublin was thrown out from his window, which was on the third floor, second or third floor of the Bais Medrash. And he told them to watch the door, not to let anybody in during Hakafis. There were a few Chassidim standing around his door, and they heard glass break. And they ran into the room and they started screaming and they couldn't find the Chayzer anywhere. And they ran downstairs and the Chayzer wasn't there. And they found him in the woods, lying on the ground. And from what the way the story goes is that there was there was a misnagit. There were people from the town were running to see what happened. And there was someone that was one of the Chayzer's enemies, a certain Rav, that he was there and he was laughing about it. Like he was mamish laughing. The Rebbe was lying there, half dead. And the chassidim were coming to take care of him, to lift him up. And the chayzer turned to him and said, that mark my word, on the day that I die, you won't even take a drink of water in your mouth. And that was Tisha B'Av. That was, he was nifted on Tisha B'Av. But that was in the feel of the chayzer of the seer of Lublin, huh? I have to check. It was a 67, 60.
Somebody told him, or he did himself.
Nobody could. There was nobody in the room. He couldn't have jumped down himself. He was an older man. He was a very, very great distance away from the Beis Medrash. And he just said, you know, he wouldn't. They asked, everybody was asked what happened, and he said that we lost. It's not going to work out. And the three tzaddikim died the same year. These are things that you know. Not a coincidence. So, Mendel Rimanover and the Kuzan Samagin. That same year.
So how this will bring us here?
No, they were. That wasn't what was going to bring Mashiach. They were working to bring Mashiach, but because they were pushing the time, apparently there were karchis that were standing in their way then, and that's why the three of them were prevented. They were posing such a formidable opposition to the evil one that it seemed that perhaps they were on the verge of bringing Gula, of bringing redemption. And they couldn't finish the job. They couldn't finish the job. They're still waiting. That's the nefila of the Chayzer. In the Sfarim, they always talk about the nefila of the field. That's the nefila of the Chayzer from Lublin, that after that, like, the Olam was very, very depressed. That was like, it's not going to happen now. That happened on Simchas Torah. And he had in there, in his diary, he had in there all different things about, but by Av already, it was finished. There was nothing anymore by the month of Av. In one version it says that it was going, that he had things written even by the day, and it went until Tisha B'Av. And then from then the book was blank. And they opened it up after, you know, they saw afterwards what was doing over there. Well, upon him, that's one example of the Ruach HaKodesh that, where we have a first-hand account from the Bnei Salso about the Chayzer from Lublin. It should be noted that the Chayzer from Lublin considered himself, the Bnei Salso, the Rebbe, the Bnei Salso considered himself to be a student of the Kozhen Samagid as well. Of the Kozhen Samagid. And how did that happen? It's a very interesting thing around that story, that whole Maisa was as follows. The Bnei Sosso, as I said, was by the Chayzer from Lublin, and the Chayzer from Lublin once said that whoever is living in the generation of the Kozhen Samagid and is able to go see him and doesn't go see him will not be Zeichet to be Makabel Pnei Mashiach Tzikayim. In other words, if the Kozhen Samagid was already very old, he was very sick, as we spoke about, he was sick for a long time. And the Chayzer said that whoever is alive, whoever is able to go see the Kozhen Samagid and doesn't see him, will not be worthy to be Mekal Mashiach Tzikayim. Immediately after he heard that, that's the difference with tzaddikim. We would have already contacted travel agents, and then we would have, you know, had a whole discussion with the family, right? And we would have, you know, maybe I'll go when the weather is nicer, and you know, it would have been a whole thing. But the Bnei Sosker Mamush walked out. He walked out. He didn't say anything to his family. He left. He sent a shliach, and he started running the Kuznets. And he went and he found the horse. He went with this. He got a ride. He mamish. It says in the Sfarim that he came out, didn't sleep only along the way when he was riding with somebody, that he was so afraid because he knew of the Kuznets' precarious health. So the Bnei Sosu went like this with unbelievable mesiras nefesh to go to Kuznets. When he came to Kuznets, when he ran into town, he was asking, what's with the Rebbe? What's with the Rebbe? So said the Rebbe is very, very weak. So he didn't even go to a place to find a place to stay or to have something to eat. He ran he found out where the Kozhen Samagid lived, and he went to the house, the place was packed wall to wall with people. And the Kozhen Samagid for most of the years of his life was in bed. And he was lying in bed. He was surrounded by a wall of people, and the Bnei Sosker himself told over what happened. And the Bnei Sosker, he had a walking stick for when he was going. He took the stick, and he says that he put it against the wall, and he hopped onto the back of some chassid, and then he was able to pull himself up, and he was able to pick a setup over the whole wall, and he saw the Kozhen Samagi lying in bed, and when he looked, when he was standing there, the Kozhen Samagi until then, it seems, was asleep. So all of a sudden, the Kozhen Samagi looked up, he opened his eyes, and he said, he called out, he says, younger man, he says, young man, he says, histakel alai, look at me. Mm-hmm. Is why? Because beriya ba'al makani. Because there's such a thing that something can be acquired by just seeing it, like with the mitziyah, right? There's such a thing that you can be kind of something by laying eyes on it. So the Kozhen Samagi looked up and he said, look at my face, beriya ba'al makani, you could be kind of me, you could acquire me as your Rebbe by one glance. And that's how he became the Bnei Sosa's Rebbe. The question is, did he actually learn from him? Was he there on other occasions and so on? One Hasidic tradition says that the Kozhen Samagi, they tried to work it out historically, chronologically. One version of the story says that the Kozhen Samagi died later on that day. The more likely Mitzvah is that he died a short time later. The reason that seems to be the case is because there are a number of instances that the Bnei Sosa brings down in this form that I heard from the Kozhen Samagi. It's very unlikely that on the day of his death, when he was lying there in bed, that the Bnei Sosa was zeichet to hear shmuzen from the Kozhen Samagi, who it seems at that time could barely talk. So apparently, the Magid was still alive for some time after that, and the Bnei Sosa was zeichet to hear, to go to him to hear, unless it means that he heard it from someone else. But he sounds, in the Svarim, it says, I heard from Adoni Mariv Rabbi, I heard from my master, the Kozhen Samagi. Which whenever he heard it from someone, he would always say. He never said, I heard, when he said, I heard from someone, it means he heard mamash from that person. So I myself have seen dozens of times when he says, I heard from the Magid. And he means the Kozhen Samagi. So apparently there was some time, but it wasn't a long time. That he had been for some time. He went to the Kozhen Samagi for some time, but he considered the Kozhen Samagi to be a Rebbe of his. In addition to that, he was also by the Oyev Yisrael, by the Apterov, by the famous Rebbe from Apt, and he also refers to the Apterov as Admor Adoni Mori Rabbi, which means that he accepted him as a Rebbe. But there's not a clear indication that he was there. That he was there too often, but he does refer to the Oyev Yisrael as the great old man, the Saba Kedisha, the holy grandfather, because the Apterov is the oldest of the tzaddikim from the old generation, and he calls him Admor Adoni Merav Rabbi. And he received. I don't recall too many times. Not that I've seen all the Svarim of the Bnei Sosa, but I don't remember too many times that he brings that I heard from Oyev Yisrael. But there are some cases where he said I heard from Oyev Yisrael. Also, it's important to remember he had two uncles who were very famous, the Rabbi Elimelech and the Rabbi Abzushi were his uncles. They were his uncles. Unfortunately, they died when he was a little boy. So he wasn't zeicher to hear much from them personally. Maybe just a few things that when he was a little child. But you have to remember that the Bnei Sosa said over things that he remembered hearing when he was a year and a half and 2 years old. He writes in his farm things that he heard when he was a baby. So he remembered some things, and he brings things that he knows from his family. One of the famous things that's brought down in all the Bnei Sosa brings this down in his safe, and it's brought down all over that the Bnei Sosa said this. Kabbalah me'ez kvay doidi zakeini saba kadish marena harab mashulam zushya. I have a Kabbalah from my uncle. This is a great uncle. I have a Kabbalah from my uncle, my great uncle. The Holy Rebbe Reb Zushya. He also calls him Saba Kadisha, the Holy Grandfather, the Rebbe Reb Zushya. What? He says, Hada'ein Rishoy Leilach Dal Amas Blina Til Shachris. That a Jew should not walk four Amas, even though it's permitted according to Halacha, one should not walk four Amas. It's a Midas Chassid, is not to walk even four Amos without washing one's hands in the morning. And he says, Omer Huzal, the Rebbe Reb Zushya said, The Bnei Sosa brings from the Rebbe Reb Zushya, from his uncle, his great uncle, that one should be careful not to even put his feet on the floor without washing Negel Vasa. That the Negel Vasa should be kept by the bed and one should lean over, not to step on the floor. And he ends and he says, The words of my uncle, the Rebbe of Zushia, were all said with Ruach HaKodesh. I don't have to back up or prove anything that he said. I don't have to explain what he said. And from there, many, many Yidden have are careful to wash Negovas, to lean over, not to put their feet kind of on the ground, but to lean over and try to wash Negovas without stepping on the ground. And that's the source of that is that we have from the Rebbe of Zushia. That's the Bnei Sosa brings from the Rebbe of Zushia. It could be in the Svadish Svarm that there's something like that too. In the Sifre Halacha, it's not a kpeda. There's no kpeda. You can't put your feet on the ground. It's just that you can't go down Amos, huh? It's a means chesedus to rush right by your bed. But in terms of putting your feet down, that he had a kabbalah from the Rebbe Abzushia. At any rate, there are very few teachings that he himself was able to receive from the Rebbe Elimelech, although he was very close to the Rebbe Elimelech's son, Rebbe Lazer, or Rebbe Eliezer. And from Israel, he brings quite a few teachings. And these were the main tzaddikim. He was also by another tzaddik, of Moshe Pishvarska, the Orpnei Moshe, who was called Moshe Seifer, not Moshe Seifer, the Chassam Seifer. Moshe Seifer, because he was a scribe. He was a scribe that wrote the Baal Shem Tov's tefillin. Moshe Pishvarska was a big Baal Ruach HaKodesh. And we know that the Bnei Soska was by him also. He wrote the Svarim Orpnei Moshe that were reprinted a few years ago. The next part of our discussion will concentrate on one of the interesting historical notes, which is what ultimately made the Bnei Sosa's life so colorful, was that among the Gedolei HaChassidus, there were quite a few who were not, and particularly in Hungary, who were not only Chassidish Rebbes, but they were also Rabbanim of cities. The Bnei Sosa, from a very early age, some have it as early as 16 years old, was a Rav of a city. He was a guy in learning. He was a genius of the first order in learning. And he was a Meira Hara. He was a Posek. He was a great Rav. And from a very early age, he was a Rav of Kehilas. He was Mamish Mekayim, as we're going to see, that he was Mamish Mekayim. The Torah says, Lo Sagur Mipnei Ish, not to be afraid of any person, not to be afraid. And even when it came to the non-Jewish authorities, when it came to anybody, the Bnei Sosa was famous for his kanos, for his zealousness, which we're going to talk a lot about. And I told you that's the munkacha, that's that munkacha brand, that fire that was known by the Minchas Elazar. The Minchas Elazar received this from the family, but the Bnei Sosa was a very, very big kanoi, who was not afraid of anybody. He was outspoken. And as I said, he was an unbelievable Ish Amis. The Kanos, you have to understand, the Kanos of the Bnei Soscha came from his Ahavas Yisrael. He was a person that was completely, absolutely, utterly in love with every Jew. And he had a Murdika Rachmanis on Yidden, a compassion for Jews. And because his love for Jews was without Shir, that's the reason why he fought so bitterly against the Maskilim, against the Reformers, with such strong Lashonis. Because he believed 100%, as he wrote over and over again, that it's because of the Reform movement, because of the Maskilim, the Enlightenment, that Mashiach is not coming, that the redemption is not here.
In Germany or in Hungary?
It was now coming into Hungary. We'll talk about when he came to Munkacs, what already happened. But it's because he felt that it's because of the Reform movement that the Jews are overwhelmed with poverty and with tsarism and with anti-Semitism. And therefore, it's because of his Ahavas Yisrael, it's because of his love for Jews that he couldn't be soivel, the suffering of Jews, that he was so outspoken in his opposition to the Reformers, and the language that he uses with the Reformers, with the is unique in the Chassidish Sfarim. Maybe until the Minchas Elazar, and in modern times the Satmar Rav, but the Satmar Rav certainly was, his Lashon is a mild compared to the Minchas Elazar and to the Bnei Sosker, mild. Let me just end. I think before we to go on to the facts, which we'll continue with Shabbat next week. You know, there's a famous word from Chaim Brisker about kanoim. You know, what is kanoi? Kanoi means someone, you know, a screamer, someone who screams. He screams about Chil Shabbos. And it's a kanoi. So Chaim Brisker said there are two types of kanoim. It's a famous word from Chaim Brisker. There are two types of kanoim. Just like you have, he says, if there's a mouse in somebody's home, if there's a mouse, he says that there are two kanoim that are seeking to get the mouse. One is the balabas, the owner of the house, and the other is a cat. But there's a big difference between the two. He said the difference is that the balabas wishes there would never have been a mouse. Now that it's here, you have to catch it. The cat is all day waiting. Halavai, there should only be a mouse over here. I'm going to kill him. So he says the real kanoim, the real tzaddikim, their hearts are broken that they have to yell. It hurts them anytime they have to raise their voices against Jews. But if there's going to be, God forbid, apikoresis, if there's going to be something in the way of holiness, then some tears, the tzaddik will scream. But the phony kanoim, the ones who stand waiting in the streets with rocks in their hand, those phony kanoim, their biggest entertainment, their biggest cheshik, is like the mouse that stands over, like in the cartoon, Tom and Jerry, Avat, Agansatog. He's waiting, he should only have an opportunity to pounce upon the apikoresis. And if they don't find an apikoros, they'll find someone that's almost an apikoros. Right? Almost as a potential apikoros. And they'll jump on him. Because the tachlis there is to kill, not to correct. When we're going to hear some of the things that the Bnei Sosra said, what he wrote and what he taught, you have an opportunity to see into the world, to look into the world of an emesdika kanoi, of a real kanoi. The real McCoy, they don't make him like that so much anymore. They don't have, nowadays, when the people are screaming and yelling, you have to be choshed already for the second time. That type that was like the Satan Rav Zecher Tzadik Levracha, or that even his greatest enemies admitted that he was Eilig Yid, you know, they were afraid of him, of his holiness. Or by the Svadim, you had the Saba Kedisa from Ralph Andari, that he was a Kanoi of the first order, you know, the Kanois. He is with tzaddikim at the heart anymore. But to see a real kanoi, the kanois of the Bnei Sascha was something bad. And he suffered a great deal for it from the Maskil. Mitchum will continue with that next time.